This episode of Legion of News is made possible by our friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
From high above the Milkpacking District, in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now, as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A homeowner shoots his stepson and then takes part in a deadly standoff. Hypothermia kills a man found on the Portland waterfront. And the Pope says condoms are okay for women, too.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, prepare yourselves, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Wednesday, November 24th, 2010. A man was found dead inside a southeast Portland home yesterday morning after a standoff and police shootout out just after midnight. Portland police identified the dead man as Craig Bowler, 46. The cause of death was not released. Bowler called police to report his stepson was attacking his stepdaughter in the neighborhood near 106th and Cherry Blossom, and that he had accidentally shot the stepson during the argument.
You don't picture those things happening on Cherry Blossom Lane.
No.
Or Gumdrop Avenue or Winterbrook Boulevard.
That's why you should never call anything like, you know, Unicorn Sparkles Avenue or something, because then when someone is killed in a bloody shootout, it just seems ironic.
I urge you to stay away from Beaverton. Well, too late for you, I suppose. But if you go through that, it's just nothing but, I mean, that's all it is. It's just like Wintergreen and Rock Rose and Dewdrop. All of those, by the way, real streets. All of them in the same, like, one square block. At a place where I used to go to play a little poker. And it's hard to feel manly when you're playing poker on Dewdrop Lane.
In Tigard, if I drive Boone's Ferry between where I live in Tualatin and Bridgeport Village, there's a side street where there's a whole area with a bunch of really nice custom homes, and there's a street called Rivendell.
Really?
Yes.
See, that's pretty awesome, though. That's fantastic. That's where you go to, you know, that's where you go to you wouldn't be playing poker. You'd be playing, I don't know, if I knew more Tolkien, I could make, like, some sort of a reference here.
I'm sure hobbits play some sort of a game or other.
I guess. All right, here's Dawn Taylor.
Anyway, the police said the stepdaughter and his wife were still in the house and that there were firearms inside when they arrived. Officers were able to get the women out safely and evacuated nearby homes. A CERT team arrived before the suspect inside started firing shots, hitting nearby homes, but no one was hurt.
Okay, when you say, use the phrase right before you, what is the second to last sentence there? The blank team.
CERT team.
CERT team.
It's the...
Please just spell.
It's S-E-R-T.
Okay, does that stand for... Hold on. CERT. Because there's the QRT, which I think maybe is either made up or a thing that they have in Baltimore that I've seen on The Wire, and so therefore I assume it's a representation of reality, which I believe the QRT is Quick Response Team. So CERT is... It's C or S?
S.
All right, is this in Portland or Vancouver?
It's in Portland.
It's in Portland.
They're basically our version of the SWAT team.
Search?
No.
Spumoni. sacrilegal.
I will look.
That's not even a word.
I will look this up to make absolutely sure I'm right.
But you should guess, though.
I think it means strategic emergency response team.
No, well, that's probably what it is. There's no point in even looking it up now because that's such a dull response and answer that it almost has to be accurate.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go. It's just when you say it, it sounds a little bit. Here's what you say when you say CERT team. It sounds like two things. It sounds a little bit like Inspector Clouseau when he talks about being a member of the Sûreté. And then also, it sounds a little bit like you're leading into some sort of an acrobatic troupe where they tase you at the end. Kind of a Cirque du Soleil.
Cirque team. Cirque du Soleil.
All right. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
Well, anyway, police fired chemical rounds inside, and minutes later, an officer fired a shot, and then a fire broke out inside the home, which I guess may be what happens when you fire chemical rounds into a house and then shoot into it.
Yes, the evidence indicates that is the outcome of that. Cirque du Soleil. That's the joke I made earlier there.
Yeah.
All right. You're listening to Legion of News. Good morning to you and good afternoon to you, depending on where you are on this fine, blue, watery globe of ours. It is Wednesday, November 24th, 2010, and thank you for joining us. At the news desk, it is Don Taylor. My name is Rick Emerson. Coming up later on this hour, we have Science on the March, also your entertainment news. Don't forget this program can be heard on your mobile device, if that is your pleasure. It's mobile.cascadia.fm. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. You can also get it via iTunes later on or as a direct MP3 download here, or at legionofnews.com. This is Don Taylor.
U.S. officials are trying to figure out what prompted North Korea to launch a deadly artillery attack on a South Korean island.
Oh, I know. Is it evil?
It might be evil.
Okay.
Although I don't know if they can actually just flat out say that.
They should.
Yeah.
They should actually, you know what the State Department should do? They should do like sort of the Daily Show weekend update thing. So when they go to a picture of Kim Jong-il, they just in fact cut to a like a photograph of Snidely Whiplash. You know, and then just don't give any explanation or context for it. Just do it without comment.
Actually, just the pictures of Kim Jong-il alone are just evil.
In a basement surrounded with
freaky-looking guy.
Whiskey and pornography, yeah.
Well, Mike Chinoy of the U.S.-China Institute believes Pyongyang may have simply been trying to get President Obama's attention.
Hey, you want to look out window in 5 minutes? You see something interesting?
We have a little sound.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that Korea one?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
The last 18 months, the North Koreans have been sending signals that they would like to engage diplomatically with the United States. And both the U.S. and South Korea have effectively rebuffed those overtures. And this is a kind of signal from the North Koreans. This is what we can do if you don't pay attention to us.
Wait, so is this because we didn't return his phone calls?
Yeah,
so that's basically what this is.
They're like that crazy girlfriend that just doesn't know how to take no for an answer.
I leave message on service. You don't call back. I destroy everything.
It breaks into your house, like cuts up your shirts.
I'm just picturing Obama's desk where there's like one of those big, like while you're out spikes. And it's just like a bunch of the little crinkly pink papers on it. While you're out, Kim Jong-il called. It says he will kill everyone if you do not return his message. And Obama going, nah, Christ.
His secretary just keeps going, you know, you really should call him
this
back.
This effing guy. Do you believe this guy? I got to go to the dry cleaners. I got to get the thing Martinized.
The last couple of messages have been really angry.
Jesus.
International security analyst Jim Walsh says the U.S. needs to play its cards right in the situation because things are a little tenuous in the region, especially in North Korea.
What with all the bombing and all?
What with
political
the killing?
Transitions can be delicate and dangerous.
The transition. South Korea is apparently transitioning just into a pile of ash. That's the transition that they're making. I'm sorry.
Political transitions can be delicate and dangerous, particularly in a context where no one's talking to one another. They're not talking to us. We're not talking to them. So mistakes and miscalculations, that's what happens under these circumstances, and that's what we have to guard against.
It must be taxing and difficult and stressing and draining and exhausting and tiring and all of those things to have to be so diplomatic when you want to just say you're dealing with a crazy guy. You know?
Yeah.
You're a guy who's just liquored up all the time and, you know, and if you believe... And now, I don't know that this is true, but according to certain media accounts, you know, is like on the brink of death, like just as a daily occurrence. And who, by the way, who has an older... Is it his sister or his aunt that he made? Because he created that weird triumvirate, Kim Jong-il, where it was like his son, his... It was either a sister or an aunt, and then it was like a brother-in-law. And that's... He did what Bill Gates did at Microsoft, where there's the three people, no one of whom is actually going to take over the reins of the country.
Yeah.
But if he were to be gone, the three folks were going to split up power. But the thing they said about it is... And I believe it was his aunt. They said that she was actually so crazy and insane that he was terrified of her. That she was the one person that just terrified Kim Jong-il. And so I'm picturing a sort of like Bellatrix Lestrange kind of a, you know, you know, but not as sexy, probably. And probably built like a stump, you know, and just, and you know, just given to torching the planet in a fit of pique over the tiniest perceived infraction.
It's whenever we have a story that involves Kim Jong-il, this always happens. Now I have the You're Worthless Alec Baldwin song stuck in my head.
Yeah. Now, see, in me, I just get the... do you know what I get? Whenever we start talking about Kim Jong-il, so you get... you're talking about the Team America thing?
Yes.
Yeah. So you get that. Sarah gets the I'm Ronery song. And then I get this thing, which is like the most 1% joke. I get this thing from Clerks, the animated series, where there was this whole ongoing joke about animator Han, which is who they imagined was the guy chained to a desk in Korea having to animate the Clerks series for ABC. And so I get last joke on you. Your show get canceled. Never air. So that's who I picture Kim Jong-il as. Just a guy manacled to a desk drawing pictures of Dante Hicks. Okay. Here's Don Taylor.
There's good news and bad news on
That's
the economic front today.
There's no good news.
Well, there is. The good news is that corporate profits are through the roof.
Is that for this corporation?
Big American corporations are making lots of money.
Is that for a corporation that perhaps we are employed by?
We are indeed in a corporation.
Are our profits through the roof?
I wouldn't call them through the roof,
okay. But
they have been steadily on the rise during our 4 months of operation.
So this good news isn't specifically about us?
Not really.
All right.
The bad news, of course, is that it's because companies have been able to make more with less, meaning they can make just as much money while hiring fewer people.
Hooray!
This means workers are scrambling to stay employed, while the people at the top of the corporate ladder make lots of money.
Hooray!
The New York Times reports that American companies just had their best quarter ever. In the third quarter of 2010, American businesses earned profits at an annual rate of $1.66 trillion, the highest figure recorded since the government began keeping track over 60 years ago. According to the Times, corporate profits have been going gangbusters for a while, thanks to strong productivity growth, you know, doing more with less actual employees, and the fact that some of the profits of American companies come from abroad, where the markets are growing.
Okay. So that just means that we're peddling cigarettes to the Vietnamese, and we're forcing three guys in the basement to do all of the work that the top five floors of the building used to do.
Hooray!
Okay. All right. Okay. You work faster! You'll never see family again!
If you're the CEO, this will be a happy Christmas for you.
Well, that's good news for me, I suppose. You are listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on this hour, we've got your entertainment news for you. This, however, is Don Taylor at the news desk.
Officials have determined that a jawbone found on an Aruban beach recently did not belong to missing Alabama teen Natalie Holloway. Aruba Solicitor General Taco Stein says the finding is based on dental records from Holloway.
Taco Stein.
His name is Taco Stein.
It's like, here's the thing about the name, and his name, there's no middle name given, there's no...
No, it just says Aruba Solicitor General Taco Stein.
Like, it's not Hector Taco Stein.
No, it just says Taco Stein. It'd be even better if it was just all one word. Taco Stein.
The thing about...
Three kinds of cheese. What a value.
It's a holiday week. Who cares? The thing about this story is there's so many jokes to be made with the name Taco Stein that it's almost like my brain sort of locks up. Like there's a bunch of intermeshed gears that can't turn in any direction, and I don't really know where to go with that. And also, I get two other things to say. One,
wouldn't it be great if he was the guy who made the horrible disco hits in the 80s, Taco?
Taco?
And he'd, like, moved to Aruba and ended up becoming, like, the Solicitor General.
Well, how do we know it's not that guy?
We don't. But I think that would
be
great.
Do you know Taco's last name?
No.
That's what I'm saying. It could be this guy right here.
Could be Stein. Taco's Stein.
Who says there are no second acts in American life, Don? I got two things to say about this. One, no. Five, is that if you're living in Aruba, it must be weird because every time you find anything anywhere, an earring, a dirt clod, but Natalie Holloway, everybody just immediately... Is that she's the only, but she's not even, she's from Florida or something, right?
Well, all of Aruba is about the size of, you know, the Clackamas Town Center Mall.
Is that true?
It's not a big island.
Is it an island? I didn't even know it was an island. I didn't know if it was like an outcropping or an isthmus, perhaps. But it's every time they find anything there, it doesn't matter what it is. Well, you know, my lights flickered on and off last night. Natalie Holloway! You know, and they immediately just dispatch the entire Aruban Police Department to go inspect that. Taco Stein. Seems like I had something else to say there. Wait. Oh. No? Wait. No. It doesn't matter because I know that the soundbite will not possibly live up to the promise given by a name like Taco Stein, but here we go.
In this bone, there was a wisdom tooth present, so that made the exclusion possible.
I can't even... All right, I got to turn everything else off
about
because
a bone and an extrusion.
He's speaking through a fuzzometer.
In this bone, there was a whiffenpoof present. So
there was a whiffenpoof present.
That's
were they singing "Girl from Ipanema"?
Well, he's talking about dental records, so it must have been a something tooth.
In this bone, there was a wisdom tooth present.
Wisdom tooth.
Oh,
made the exclusion possible.
Okay, so just FYI, not whiff and poof.
No,
wisdom tooth. Today's one of those days where everything's going to make me giggle, so you have to not make eye contact with me after we say things like that.
I don't think I would have ever made the connection that wisdom tooth rhymes with whiff and poof.
That's why I'm here.
Now I'm writing a song.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Taco Stein explains what experts do know about the bone.
Sweet Adeline.
That's too much... Mixed material here to say that this was either male or female. It's human, and it's of a relatively young age.
Really, just say it. When it comes to big piles of bones, all white women look alike. I mean, really.
Oregon and Washington fishery officials have agreed no commercial or sport fishing will be allowed this season for the once plentiful smelt, now under federal protection. Fishery managers set the rule during a conference call yesterday, saying sport dipping for smelt is unlikely for several more years.
Is sport dipping for smelt that?
That's the name of my album.
I was going to ask if that was the follow up to the Filthy Raoul or whatever sex act the kids are talking about.
I think that's what Weezer is calling their next album, sport dipping for smelt.
I don't understand why how you can have a fish. Presume, which is edible, by the way, because I ate them when I was a kid and they were fine. They were tasty. You can have a fish whose name is also the name of like a process where you just extrude various kinds of metals into one another and then make the water undrinkable. It's puzzling. Isn't that smelting metal? Isn't that a process where you actually metal alloy?
Yeah.
But I'm just saying.
It has nothing to do with the fish.
Yeah, but like there are lots of words. Look, there are infinite possibilities and combinations of 26 letters. Why would they go right to that word?
I don't know. Smelt historically returned to the Cowlitz River every winter in abundance with smaller runs in several other area rivers. The runs started to falter in the 1980s. The Daily News of Longview says the last decent run on the Cowlitz was in 2003. The Cowlitz Indian Tribe petitioned to have smelt listed under the Endangered Species Act, and the Fisheries Service listed them as threatened last March.
Okay.
All I know about smelt is that apparently they're very salty.
Yes.
Because I back when I went to culinary school and I used to sell plasma because I was poor, and I was in there with these two like 300-year-old black guys, and they were talking about like coming in and giving blood, and the one guy was saying, "When I came in last week and they wouldn't let me give any because they said there was too much salt in my blood, and I think it was because I ate a mess of smelt. I shouldn't have had that big plate of smelt."
Were you donating blood inside the PJs?
He was like a character
Hudson!
From the PJs. I
Get
swear
him out
God
of here!
He was. And he just kept saying, big plate of smelt! And it was just cracking me up. And I was
awesome.
Up there trying not to just laugh uproariously while I was overhearing his conversation about the smelt. Now, whenever I hear the word smelt, I just think of that guy.
Smelt are a little bit like grunion. Not entirely, but they're somewhat like grunion. And have you ever caught grunion, the fish?
Yes.
That is like an amazing process because that's one of those things where if you live like anywhere in like any sort of coastal community, Southern California is just lousy with grunion a couple times a year. And it's the thing where you go out there and you wait on the beach at night, and you can only do it like every other night because it's like they got to let them like bury their eggs or whatever the hell they do.
And you're only allowed to catch them with your hands.
You
can't use any equipment.
That's the thing is you can use your hands. And by the way, you want to try to pick a beach at which there are no Vietnamese because you will never, if you're trying to compete with the Vietnamese on that, you are never going to catch a single thing. Because it's like they just have like the Jedi. The Vietnamese fishermen, and like you get the whole family down there, and it's like they just have the spidey sense when it comes to how to grab those things. Because the thing about the grunion is, and the smelt is very similar. I mean, it's basically like the length of this pen. It's like it's like 5-6 inches long.
Yeah, they're very small little fish.
Not that big around, but they're composed like entirely of just muscle and hate, and just a loathing for all humanity. Because you pick it up, and it's like you're trying to hold. It's like you're trying to hold like something powered by nuclear fission in your hand. It's like it's all you can do to just for the thing not to pry your fingers open, which is amazing because it has like no hands.
Well, come on, if you only got to have sex like twice a year, and the one time you're trying to do it, there were these giant
Vietnamese
apes,
guy putting you in a bucket.
These giant apes trying to grab you and jam you into a bucket, you'd be filled with hate too.
Damn it, a tool wielding primate is putting me into a receptacle again. I hate it when this happens.
All I want to do is bury my eggs. I just want to spawn, damn it. Yeah, you'd be very angry.
Yeah. Female grunion just want to talk, though.
Well, afterwards, they want to chat. They want to be cuddled.
Here's Don Taylor.
It's one of the busiest travel days of the year today. An online movement is urging airline passengers to take part in National Opt-Out Day.
I don't think I've heard
today
of that.
To protest the TSA's use of those full body scanners. You might have heard something about the body scanners.
Well, that doesn't sound familiar.
Travel expert Bob Diener says people headed to the airport should pack their patience.
Is this travel?
This is opt-out one.
Opt-out one.
Recommending that you give it an extra hour. There could be very long lines, and for every person that opts out of going to the scanner, that means another person that will automatically be taken for a pat-down, and these pat-downs take a lot more time.
Wait a minute. Hold on. I don't understand the second half of that. What does he mean for every...
We're recommending that you give it an extra hour. There could be very long lines, and for every person that opts out of going to the scanner, that means another person that will automatically be taken for a pat-down, and these pat-downs take a lot more time.
Oh, okay. He's not saying... He's just saying that person will be taken
right
for a pat. I thought it was like, and because you opted out, that guy will get his anus probed.
That's what it sounds like, yeah.
They should do that. They should threaten to probe a member of your family if you opt out. They should be like, look, if you opt out, we're not going to search you. We're going to search her. And then they just go right for your mom.
Yeah, the thing or do the thing your teacher did in like the fifth grade. Just stand there and say, okay, if anyone opts out, everyone is getting pat downs. Everyone.
For all. Yeah. Now, it's just a big arms race, you know, between the TSA and the travelers. So that ought to be the next thing they go to. That's the nuclear option, where it's just a big excursion up your hindquarters for everyone.
James Babb, co-founder of WeWon'tFly.com, says pat-downs are preferable.
This is pat-down one.
Those that must fly, we ask to consider opting out of the scan. It's going to be better for your health, and it might put them in a position where they must accommodate the travelers who refuse to be abused.
Babb says passengers face a really bad choice at airport security checkpoints.
Passengers may be exposed to the radiation strip search, or they may opt
the
out
radiation
of that
strip
and go for
search
the enhanced pat-down, which under any other circumstance might be considered sexual assault.
A radiation strip search sounds like you're that guy in Watchmen where they're just saturating you with rays until your atoms, you know, like fall apart or something, you know? Just like they're burning your clothes off of you with like some nuclear gun that they... Here's the thing about that. The thing about them, like it being dangerous, is just a big load. It's not that, like, it's not dangerous. It's just that compared to the rest of your life, like, what do you care? I mean, it's just one more dose of radiation in a life where you're dosed with radiation all the time, like, in everything you touch. So it's not that, like, in some sort of theoretical world it's not going to be damaging to you or whatever, but it's no more damaging than just, like, being alive.
Now,
so what?
One of the things that they keep talking about is, stewardesses or whatever we call them now. Flight attendants have been saying that, you know, I get a lot more radiation than that because I'm flying all the time and I'm not riddled with cancer. And so you kind of go,
And the thing is, like, you're probably going to be riddled with cancer eventually anyway. There's just nothing you can do about that. Everybody gets cancer. Everybody dies, of some fistful of something they don't want growing inside their head. So that's just sort of the way of the world.
I like how, though, the biggest argument against the opt-out day seems to be that, well, you know, you shouldn't do it because it'll just inconvenience people and, you know, make everyone know we are unhappy.
Because flying on the day before Thanksgiving is usually such a, you know, it's a quick process. Normally you're in and out in like 2 minutes.
Because, you know, it's one thing to let the government know that you think that they've gone too far with something, but not if it actually, you know, is uncomfortable for anyone. Not if it makes people, like, have to stand in the warm airport for an extra 45 minutes.
It's like a bell curve. It's where it becomes more and more inconvenient and more slow and more irritating and annoying, which I'm willing, I think, to swallow if the end result is like a year from now I can fly and it's not going to take me 90 minutes to get through because everybody has to take off their goddamn shoes.
We know in some countries and in this country in the past, if you stand up to the government and say and protest what they're doing in some fashion, they kill you. They have soldiers who shoot you. This is like, you know, we're not supposed to do it because, you know, it'll kind of inconvenience some people and make the TSA agents work harder. We've just become a bunch of soft pussies.
Okay. You are listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on this hour, we have your Science on the March, also your entertainment news. The Rick Emerson radio program comes up a little bit after 1 o'clock following a brief musical interlude. Today we'll talk to Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. And I don't really know the connection between these two things, but I got a note last night from our chief of staff, Cheryl, saying that Aaron wanted to talk to us really early today
because he was talking about Four Loko. So I don't know if he's just planning on being drunk enough later in the day that he won't be able to operate the phone or what. So that's coming up. We've also got another installment of Pop Culture Authority. Today we'll be talking about the movie Pulp Fiction and answering the question, the hell is the name of that kid who has Marcellus's briefcase anyway? Because, you know, it's one of those things that about every 30 days I get a question about. So Don Taylor's going to be tackling that. We'll also have another installment of The Greatest Songs Ever Made, plus Your Penis Watch. You are currently listening to Legion of News, brought to you by, among other folks, Squires Electric. You can find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com. That is squireselectric.com. Or you can call 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609. The first thing you need to know about Squires Electric is they've been in Portland for 12 years and have been here for over a decade. The second thing you need to know is that we've talked to these guys. We know them. We've met them. We can vouch for them. They come to their house, if they come to your business, if they come to a building that you are remodeling, something you're having reconstructed, something you're having upgraded or repaired. And they're going to do, whatever it takes to get your situation, whether it has to do with, smoke damage or water damage, or whether you're having your Ethernet cabling redone so that it can handle the needs of your current business or your new business, and whether you're moving into a house that was built 75 years ago and you want to make sure that all the wiring in the walls is, that it's up to speed and it's going to get you through the winter without any sort of an issue. And they're going to do it right. They're going to do it right the first time. And when they leave, things are going to be operating correctly. And, and they're also not going to destroy your place in the process. It's not going to be like some weird sort of electrified version of the money pit where they come in trying to fix your toaster or something, and by the time they leave, it's like your floor is a cesspool. So when they come there, they're going to make sure that it works, then to make sure that your house looks just as good as it did when they arrived, and everything is going to operate properly. You can find out more about it by going to squireselectric.com. That is squireselectric.com, or calling 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609. It's something you don't really think about until it doesn't work, until you need it maintained or fixed or installed. And it's when you call Squires Electric for electrical wiring or wiring of any kind in your home or office. That is squireselectric.com. Here's Don Taylor.
Let's do our science news.
Here's your science on the march for Wednesday right here at Legion of News.
A tilt of the head can make both men and women look more attractive, according to a new study. Australian researchers have found that women who tilt their faces forward are seen as more attractive, while men are considered better looking when they tilt their heads backwards. The results may hark back to the differences in male and female height, the researchers report in the journal Evolutionary Psychology. Men are typically taller than women, so they're used to seeing female faces from above, an effect mimicked by a forward head tilt. Women, on the other hand, usually look up at men's faces, so the head back tilt may appear more masculine. Previous studies have shown that ladies like men with relatively short upper faces, although fertility can also affect what women find sexy.
Relatively short upper faces.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I don't know. I like the high forehead, the big forehead thing.
Is that what an upper face is? Does it just mean forehead?
I don't know. I'm assuming they mean from like the eye. Well, your eyes are in the middle of your face.
Aren't in the middle of your face.
Yes, they are.
Your eyes are not in the middle of your face.
Yes, they
are. How much do you want to bet that if I were to measure right now from like where your hair begins here to your chin, that your eyes are 2/3 of the way up your face? I'm looking at your face right now. You're not. Are you looking at your face? I am directly across from you.
You're not taking into consideration hairline. As a former art student, I can tell you.
I am.
The eye line is in the center.
I'm starting here
of
and going to your chin.
Nope, top of the head.
No, but that's not your. The top of your head isn't your face.
Okay, it's the middle of your head.
You said face. Don't get snippy at me because you used the wrong word, sister.
It's the middle of your head.
I'll get you a dictionary next time so you can proceed more cautiously with matters of linguistics. It's snarky with me. Snark you till you can't walk anymore. All right. Here's Don Taylor continuing with his story about your face.
The research used computer-generated three-dimensional models of male and female faces. Participants rated attractiveness, masculinity, and femininity of the faces in five positions, ranging from tilted up to tilted down. Female faces were seen as both more feminine and more attractive with a forward tilt, the study showed. Conversely, a backward tilt made men look both masculine and more attractive.
Well, that must be like a real, just a real moderate thing, though. Because we were talking, I guess we were getting our pictures taken on Sunday. We were talking about how people do that thing of they stick their head forward or they tilt the head back trying to get rid of the waddle. And it's like if you just tilt down, it magnifies that. It's like some sort of a waddle elongation device where it just sort of, it extrudes out like some sort of a fleshy Play-Doh kind of a substance.
Well, it depends because depends on where the camera is, too. If you put your head up, it'll actually make you look bigger in this whole neck area, whereas if you tilt your head down, you get more of a jawline.
So when it comes to women, you're talking about the classic MySpace Facebook photo.
Yes.
Where it's the holding the camera up when you're in the bathroom and
right.
then looking up, like sort of tilting your head down and then looking up,
yes.
Like underneath your eyebrows or whatever, mm-hmm. at the camera. All right. So as with guys, that explains like why in every mugshot and every time you see a guy in Jersey Shore, he's doing that thing of hooking his thumbs in his belt and like tilting his head back like this.
Yeah.
Like he's in suicidal tendencies or something.
Yes.
All right. Because chicks dig that, apparently.
I guess so. Apparently so.
Awesome. Here is Don Taylor.
The golden glow of streetlights could soon be replaced by green fluorescence of tree leaves. Scientists from the University of Taipei in China have implanted glowing sea urchin-shaped gold nanoparticles known as bio-light-emitting diodes, or bio-LEDs, inside the leaves of a plant. The new nanoparticles could replace the electricity-powered streetlight with biologically powered light that removes CO2 from the atmosphere 24 hours a day. In the future, bio-LED could be used to make roadside trees luminescent at night, said scientist Yen-Sun Su in an interview with Chemistry World. This will save energy and absorb CO2 as the bio-LED luminescence will cause the chloroplast to conduct photosynthesis. The gold sea urchin-shaped nanoparticles are the key to turning a material that normally absorbs light into one that emits it. Chlorophyll, the photosynthetic pigment that gives leaves their characteristic green color, is widely known for its ability to absorb certain wavelengths of light. However, under certain circumstances, such as being exposed to violet light, chlorophyll can also produce a light of its own. When exposed to light with a wavelength of about 400 nanometers, the normally green-colored chlorophyll glows red.
I'm telling you right now, if I could have any sort of, if I could take a power from the animal, mineral, or vegetable world that I do not currently possess, it would be the gift of photosynthesis. Imagine, I guess without the green skin, but imagine if you could just sort of sit outside in the sun and then it's, it's like you've just had your lunch.
Yeah.
You just sort of, lay out and you get yourself a tan and then you've also had like your three-course meal. Then you're done.
But on really, really horribly overcast days, though, you might just feel extra sluggish.
I suppose. By the way, somebody says I know that I'm chiming in late in this, but speaking about profits coming from abroad, I feel compelled to note that my pimping profits come from abroad. There you go. He gets points, by the way, for noting early on that he was late with that comment.
Anyway, the bioluminescence thing so far has only been limited to a test subject, which is an aquatic plant. They're working to expand to terrestrial plants like trees that would line streets, but they haven't actually done it yet. Today at Christie's, the fine art auction house headquartered in London, an Apple One motherboard sold for $212,267. It was purchased by Marco Bollione, a private Italian collector who, along with acquiring the motherboard, also got the original box, instruction manuals, and a signed letter from Steve Jobs.
Is the Apple One the thing that had the wooden case that that Wozniak built by hand?
I think so, yes.
And it had wasn't a soldering thing, but it had that where he had basically branded his name into it with a thing, it's a thing like a soldering, but he'd sort of burnt his name into the casing, and it had this, and it had a keyboard, but it was literally just like scrap wood or something that he'd found in a dumpster, and he built the case for the computer out of that. If that's the thing I'm thinking of. And I wonder if there was more than one of those. Now, I don't even really know what the Apple One computer was. I'm trying to place that in the timeline of Apple products.
Well, it did say that this was the very first completed motherboard, Apple motherboard.
So it must have been
probably been it.
So the first one that he, actually built, the one that they got to work.
Matthew Patton, head of public relations at Christie's, said you had to connect it to a keyboard and monitor, but it was the first fully integrated motherboard. Steve Wozniak, co-founder of Apple and the person who designed and constructed the Apple One, attended the auction.
He's the coolest guy, too. If you see Wozniak now, and he could just be, I guess on the one hand, how bitter can he really be? Because he's got like a skillion dollars. But it's just like with every passing year, it's not that he got written out of the history of Apple. It's just that, when all of the primary advancements from Apple, when all of Apple's big breakthroughs came 10 or 15 or 20 or 25 or 40 years ago, it was a lot easier for Wozniak to loom large in the company's history. But the longer Apple is around and the more things they create without him there, then, the more diluted his place in the company's past sort of becomes. So it's good to see things like this, because if you go back and if you look at the creation, and I don't know a whole lot about the internal workings of computers, but the great thing about it is that he did that motherboard with far fewer components than anybody said was possible at the time. They said that, like, you got to have 32 chips or something to make it work. And you see him interviewed about it. He's like, well, and then I figured out how to do, like, instead of 32, I could just do 28. And then I thought, well, if I can get this process to be redundantly created over here, then it's like I can get it down to 18. And little by little and chip by chip, I was able to reduce it to where I was able to get within the parameters. And he's clearly just so, like, giddy and ebullient with enthusiasm even now about the whole thing. He's just the coolest guy.
Yeah, well, Steve Jobs is basically running like this massive multi-billion dollar empire and living in a palace and doing, you know, all of his Steve Jobsy things. Wozniak travels around and helps small startup companies build, like, you know, their own computers and create their own processors and things, like, in their garages, basically. He spends a lot of time helping, like, startup inventors who are working on Shoestring, but because he's apparently just still totally in love with the whole idea of the hardware and inventing stuff and making stuff work.
And boning Kathy Griffin, but, you know, I can overlook that. Nobody's perfect.
He played himself on Big Bang Theory this week.
Is that true?
He was sitting in a restaurant, and Sheldon and Leonard saw him across the room, and the one character, Leonard, he explains to Penny, the girl, that's Steve Wozniak. He was one of the founders of Apple Computer. And she says, I know who he is. I watched Dancing with the Stars.
Awesome. Was he wearing a Hawaiian shirt?
No, he was just wearing a sports shirt. But yes, he was. He can't really act, but it doesn't matter. He's the Woz.
He doesn't really. It's like if you ever saw that episode of Futurama where, God, what would that? It was something, I think it was like an Al Gore-centric episode. It had something to do with global warming or some damn thing. But it was like Stephen Hawking. It was like Stephen Hawking, Al Gore, like Gary Gygax, the Dungeons and Dragons guy.
Oh, I mean,
and somebody else, and none of them could act at all. Yeah. There's just no, but it's like it doesn't really matter. So here is Don Taylor.
That's all of our science.
There's your science on the march for Wednesday right here at Legion of News at Cascadia.fm, which, speaking of Apple, can be gotten, obtained, downloaded, listened to via iTunes later on today, or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. Don't forget, coming up slightly after 1 o'clock, you got the Rick Emerson radio program featuring Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week, who's going to talk about the recent ban on Four Loko. Also got another installment of Pop Culture Authority, The Greatest Songs Ever Made, and Your Penis Watch. This is Don Taylor.
The body of a man was found along the Willamette River waterfront Tuesday in Portland after temperatures dipped below freezing across Oregon. Portland police said investigators determined that 22-year-old Michael Ellis of Southeast Portland died from hypothermia. His body was found in a partially frozen fountain near the Rose Festival building. Police said it appeared he had taken off his clothes and gotten into the water, actions consistent with hypothermia, in which the brain can fool the body into a need to cool down. But police want to hear from anyone who may know about the hours prior to his arrival at Waterfront Park. If you know anything, you should call Detective Chris Traynor at 503-823-0541.
And in other news, we're apparently running the fountain when it's like 21 degrees outside. How is that even possible?
This is probably on a timer, and nobody thought, well, you probably actually want to keep it running so that the water's
going
through the pipes
or something,
so the pipes don't burst. You want to at least have a little bit of water running through it.
Interesting. All right, I'm trying to process that. What's going on over there?
Oh, I was just thinking. I was scratching my chin in a thoughtful manner.
I couldn't tell if you were actually just itchy, or if you were being the thinker, or if you were just pondering something.
No, I was just scratching my chin and then thinking, and then suddenly realizing, oh, you know, I should be turning on the water in my kitchen and drizzling it so that the pipes don't. And I forgot to do that because it's been like over a year since it was so cold. I had to think about that.
Here's a weird thing. I actually was noticing this last night in my home, that if you turn on any faucet in my house, the water that comes out is warm, like right out of the gate. You know, and I don't mean like relatively warm, like I'm outside and then I come inside and I'm like, oh, it's so, you know, everything feels warm because I've been out in the 19 degree weather. I mean, if I'm in the house, you know, just acclimated to the temperature inside my home and I turn on the kitchen tap, the water that comes out is not cold, it's warm. And it's not usually like that. Like during the summer, it's not like that. So is there some like water warming thing somewhere? Is that a deal where like they ratchet up? Like because it's like the water in your sink doesn't come from the hot water heater, right? I mean, it just comes from some other...
I don't know. Maybe
such an idiot. I don't even know where that comes from.
In your house, maybe the pipes are close enough to the hot water heater in the basement that it warms it up.
But again, but it doesn't do it during the summer. During the summer, the water that comes out of the tap is usually, you know, it's room temperature or slightly cooler, and then you got to let it run to get colder or whatever. So I just don't understand how it is now that the water, it makes no sense at all. It's a paradox where the water that is coming out of my kitchen tap is actually warm to the touch.
That makes no sense.
I don't know where the water that comes out of my kitchen tap actually comes from either. Like, where is that Wait, I mean, is there just like a big tube or something that's coming, you know, directly from the reservoir?
Yes.
All right. It is a tube. It probably is a tube. It probably is an actual series of tubes, isn't it?
Yes. They are called pipes.
Somebody should do, and it's not going to be me because I don't care that much. This is a thing I care enough to watch, but not enough to actually create. So if you just put this in front of me like on VH1 with like maybe, you know, some guy, Hal Sparks or somebody, you know, Michael Ian Black maybe, making ironic comments during it. Some sort of a science special where you list things that are, in fact, a series of tubes.
Hmm.
Name two things right now that are a series of tubes, Don Taylor.
Habit trails and sewer systems.
Well done. See, there you go. I bet it's like springs that you really didn't realize how many series of tubes you actually dealt with and were dependent upon on a daily basis.
Gopher holes? Series of tubes?
A homemade whiskey still.
Hmm, indeed. Can I move on with the news now?
I don't know. Give it a try.
Okay. In a startling turnaround for a man who was just recently saying that condoms exacerbate the scourge of AIDS, condoms which are in their own way, kind of like tubes, the Vatican clarified Pope Benedict XVI's stance on condoms Tuesday, saying that the Holy Father believes condoms are an acceptable form of disease prevention for everyone, including men, women, and transsexuals.
It's funny he went right to male prostitutes, though, in the interview where he said this originally, because the guy, it's in this book-length interview he did with somebody who I guess has made kind of a career out of profiling Pope Benedict and back when he was John Ratzenberger or whatever the hell his name was before. And the guy says, well, what about the condoms? Come on. And it's like the Pope goes right to like, well, if you're a male prostitute, for example, it might be okay. And it's like that was the first thing that came to mind.
Yeah. Because you know, they're already committing a whole bunch of other sins anyway, he said.
It was just weird. He didn't go like, you know, like, I don't know, if you're living in sub-Saharan Africa where one in three people has AIDS. Like, he didn't say that. He just went right to if you're tricking, you know. Like, if you're hustling on 53rd and 3rd, sure, have at it. Rubber up.
Well, when an Italian newspaper wrote about the story using the feminine form of the word prostitute, a Vatican spokesman checked with the Pope to see whether they'd made a mistake. I personally asked the Pope if there was a serious, important problem in the choice of the masculine over the feminine, said Reverend Federico Lombardi. He told me no.
Oh, there's a problem.
According to Lombardi, the heart of the matter was taking responsibility, of taking into consideration the risk to the life of the person with whom you are having a relationship, whether you're a woman, a man, or a transsexual. According to the Vatican, the Pope's statements don't represent a change in church teaching on birth control, which remains forbidden.
I wonder if when the Pope says things like this, if there's just a whole wing of, like, clarifying and quashing awkward things that come out of the Holy See. You know what I mean? Like, he just says something weird and immediately there's, like, they press, like, there's a red button on the desk that's like a break glass in case of fire. Where, you know, it's like break glass in case the Pope says something that indicates he might not only have been a member of the Hitler Youth, but is latently gay. You press it and then just they spring into action, going down a series of polls, so to speak. That's a double pun right there. You're listening to Legion of News, brought to you by a series of fine business partners, including a company we've been talking about the last couple of days. It's actually a family business, and they've been there since the 1940s. Troy and Jennifer are the couple that are now running Christmas Mountain Trees. You can find out more about them at ChristmasMountainTrees.com. That is ChristmasMountainTrees.com. And there's, you know, a lot of times you'll hear about something that, you know, is sort of positioned as or framed as being a family business. And really, it's not a family business. I mean, unless you consider, like Dow Chemical, like a family. You know, a family of evil oligarchies, perhaps. And it actually is a real family business. Christmas Mountain Trees has a really... It has one of those stories that it just seems so impossibly filled with Americana that, you know, if I didn't know that it was true, that it is the sort of thing you just instinctively... You just imagine it being dreamt up by some guy in an ad man's office somewhere. But it started in, I think, 1942, when the grandfather of Troy, who now runs the family farm... The grandfather would go up to Mount Hood, and he would cut these trees down by hand and load them in the back of his vehicle, and then he would bring them back to town. And he would sell them for Christmas. And now you got the, whatever, 70 years later, 68 years later, Christmas Mountain Trees, a third-generation family farm. And it's what they do. It's what they do year-round. They grow and they care for the trees as opposed to, you know, some guy who picked them up from, like, his cousin Chet, and he's just trying to, like, unload them so he can, you know, get enough to buy himself some skull for the evening. So if you think about the Christmas experience as you picture it, as you imagine it, and maybe as you've never had it. I mean, that might be the thing. You know, maybe you had a lot of great Christmases growing up and you're trying to replicate that for your kid, or maybe, you know, maybe you're an adult and you don't feel like you've ever really been able to have the Christmas experience the way that it is depicted for you or the way that you've always dreamt about it. And this is the year you can do that. You find out more by going to ChristmasMountainTrees.com. It's just like it sounds, ChristmasMountainTrees.com. ChristmasTreeLighting.com, where they make picking your Christmas tree. It's not just a thing, like, it's just not one more thing you got to get done. This is not just another item you got to check off on your list. It is an entire, process. It is an entire experience that Don Taylor, by the way, and I will be taking part in.
We will.
In early December. So be listening for details on that. But you go to Christmas Mountain Trees, you go to their family farm, and you get spectacular views of, not only the farm itself, which is like 85,000 trees or some such, and you get the mountains, you get the snow-capped peaks, you get your breath in the air, you get the hot chocolate, you get your cider, and then they have this custom wagon that you were in. It's this motorized wagon that they take you to the Christmas tree. You know, I was going to say it's a Christmas tree stand, but it's not even really that. It's like an actual forest. And you go through and you look at all of the trees. You see the one that just sort of calls out to you for being in your living room. You pick it out and you can either cut it down yourself or you can just say, hey, I want that one right there. And then they have a guy for that. There's a guy that comes out. They take the tree. They remove the excess needles. They bale it, which means they wrap it up with twine so you can get it into your living room. You take the twine off and the tree sort of miraculously springs into place. While they're doing that, you and your family are in front of a fire. You have, you have your cider, you have your coffee or whatever. It's an amazing view. It's one of those things that the quiet, and this is a thing that gets, this phrase gets used so often and it's almost never true. But it is one of those things that, again, if you have kids, they're going to look back and they're when they're teenagers and they're loathing you, you can point to this as something you did that they can't find fault with.
Remember when we were happy?
That's what I'm saying.
And they'll say,
it'll be unimpeachable. And they'll have to go, well, fine, I'll grant you that, Dad, if that is your name. So I'm just telling you, find out more about it by going to ChristmasMountainTrees.com. Christmas Mountain Trees, just like it sounds. They open Friday, November 26th at 10 a.m. Regular hours are Wednesday to Friday, 10 to 4:30, Saturday, Sunday, 9 to 4:30, all the way up until December 19th. ChristmasMountainTrees.com. Here is Dawn Taylor.
A New York City man surrendered to the feds on Friday to be charged in what authorities said should have been a well-planned stick-up. Salvatore La Rosa, 25, and an unidentified accomplice allegedly followed the owners of Brothers Pizzeria home on June 30, 2008. They put on masks and confronted the victims at gunpoint in their driveway. The assailants demanded one of the shopkeepers hand over a bag, believing that it contained the day's proceeds from the pizzeria. Instead, the bag that they stole contained pizza dough. Even though it wasn't cash, the robbery victim resisted and was shot twice in the legs. La Rosa was released Monday on $1 million bail and is still being charged.
So they thought it contained what?
They thought it contained all the money that the guys had made at their pizza place.
And it really contained?
Pizza dough.
Okay. Wanted to make sure that I heard that right and I wasn't transposing into my head.
But then, for some reason, the pizzeria guy still did not want to hand over the bag. And they shot him twice in the legs.
Okay. Yeah, sometimes you just got to hand over the bag. Sometimes when they ask for the sack, you got to give them the sack.
Yeah. I'm tearing something.
Okay.
There we go.
Here's Todd Taylor.
A powerful winter storm system is moving across parts of the West and into the northern and central plains states today. Blizzard warnings are up and travel advisories are posted in many areas. In Salt Lake City, Utah, store clerk Stephen Markley says the problem isn't so much the snow or slippery roads.
Markley.
For the most part, people are complaining about the cold. They're not complaining about, the roads being unnavigable.
Or the bees.
Marklar says the Marklar conditions are a little Marklar.
Well done.
I had a friend who sent me a text message earlier, and she said that her car skidded out of control, and she went sideways and almost ran into something.
This is just one of those stories where it's like we're just hearing some guy talk about his bunions acting up somewhere. I had this one lady one time talk about this moment when she almost got stuck, and then she didn't, but she almost did. And then he just stares blankly at the camera and blinks real slow. All right.
It's time for entertainment
Jesus
news.
Jesus God. All right, here's your... I don't know what could be more entertaining than that. Here's your entertainment news for Wednesday right here at Legion of News.
Director George Hickenlooper died of an accidental overdose of a prescription painkiller mixed with alcohol, according to the Denver's coroner office. The 47-year-old director, who died in Denver on October 30th, directed the movies Factory Girl, The Man from Elysian Fields, and the documentary Hearts of Darkness, A Filmmaker's Apocalypse. His latest film, Casino Jack, featuring Kevin Spacey as Jack Abramoff, opens on December 1st. Bruce Willis will be used in an ad campaign for Trust Bank. Pictures of Willis on Moscow. What? Pictures of Willis on Moscow appeared on Monday with the phrase, "Trust is just like me, but a bank."
I think it's in Moscow.
Yeah, I think
as in
so.
Moscow, Idaho.
But anyway, yes, it appeared. No, because it's a Russian bank, apparently.
So you still wouldn't be on it, though.
No, but anyway, it's in Moscow, in Russia.
Really?
Yes. And so it's a bank in Russia. It took me a three-sentence story, and it's not really very clear. But yes, in the statement, the Russian bank said that Willis reflects the bank's values of trust and dignity. So yes, the ads feature him with the phrase, "Trust is just like me, but a bank."
I thought that everybody in Hollywood got the memo that we now find out about this. When you're busy selling, like, an impotence pill or something, you know, in Hong Kong, like, word will get back. It's not like it was in the 70s, guys. Yeah, you know, it's...
The intranets, okay. You know, let everyone know. Despite online rumors that reports that she was placed on indefinite hiatus due to her onset behavior, Gossip Girl actress Taylor Momsen is still a series regular, reports People. "She's totally a part of the show," said the source. "Yes, you've seen less of her this season, but it's dictated by creative." Although her role on the show has diminished, Momsen is not sitting idle, as she is the frontwoman of her band, The Pretty Reckless.
Wait a minute. So this is not... I'm thinking of Blake Lively.
No, Taylor Momsen is a little Jay. She's the younger sister of... whatever the guy's name is who dates Blake Lively. She's just a huge pain in the ass, both apparently in real life and on the show.
Here's the thing: when Lara went out of town, for better or worse, I then no longer heard Gossip Girl playing in the other room, which is where I got all my Gossip Girl was sort of the thing that I osmosed into my body. I didn't really consciously try to understand everything about the show. I just would wake up one day and I knew it all. So without her around, though, the Gossip Girl knowledge just started to fall out of my head, and I'm kind of okay with that.
Christian Slater, who did not really do very well recently with his TV series My Own Worst Enemy and The Forgotten, has signed on to star with Brett Harrison of Reaper in the upcoming Fox sitcom Breaking In. The show centers on the lives of security experts. Reuters reports that the show may serve as a mid-season series that will be paired up with Raising Hope. Although it's not been officially canceled, Running Wild has not been given a full season order by Fox.
The last truly good Christian Slater project was...
I actually thought My Own Worst Enemy wasn't bad.
Which I never saw, actually.
Yeah. I love Christian Slater. I have been in love with him since way back in the days of...
Gleaming the Cube.
Gleaming the Cube, and when he was like... What's the movie where he was where he had the radio station?
Pump Up the Volume.
Pump Up the Volume. Oh, I love him in Pump Up the Volume. And Heathers. And the Baboon Boy movie, where he had the Baboon Heart. I love the Baboon Heart movie.
I don't think I know that movie.
It's called Something Heart.
Baboon?
Reckless Heart. No, it's not called Baboon Heart, but it should be.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Oh,
yeah.
My God, I forgot that movie even existed.
And I always call it the Baboon Boy movie.
Oh, my God. That was a thing that I'd totally forgotten about, and now it's all coming back like some weird repressed memory.
Yeah.
Jesus.
You're
always pulling for him.
I've had such a thing for Christian Slater for such a long time.
All right. So you root for him.
I do root for him. Okay. I want him to do well.
I don't dislike him. He seems like maybe a guy who... Maybe he had some personal difficulties and doesn't always choose his projects all that well, but, what are you going to do?
Hold his temper at parties.
No.
And then ends up going to jail, but,
he's doing the best with what he has.
Yeah. Dancing with the Stars turned into the Delaware Senate race of reality TV with lots of talk about the power of the Tea Party, but ultimately a defeat for its appointed princess. Bristol Palin placed third in the finale of the hit ABC show, after weeks of astonishing viewers and ABC executives alike by sticking around. The crown went to Jennifer Grey, who consistently got top marks from the judges and scored a perfect 30 in Monday night's freestyle dance. The Dirty Dancing star said she was thrilled by her win, but it extracted a price. "I really wanted to leave it all on the floor last night," Grey said. "Unfortunately, I left a little piece of my spine on the floor. I ruptured my disc."
That's fine. As long as she goes more than 5 minutes without talking about her goddamn nose. Oh,
yeah.
It's Untamed Heart.
There we go.
That's what you're
thinking.
And by the way, you want to know that Christian Slater is made up of a series of tubes. And it says, really? It's true, I guess, when you think about it. All right.
A porn star is accusing Charlie Sheen of offering her money to keep quiet about his alleged attack against her in the couple's New York hotel room.
TV's Charlie Sheen?
TV's Charlie Sheen.
Okay.
But Sheen attorney, Yael Galanter, told Joy Behar that never happened.
Definitely never an offer for money to silence her or anything else. As a matter of fact, when her lawyers approached us, we told them to go pound salt.
Oh, I believe this guy. I believe anything this guy says.
To pound salt?
Yeah.
I think he's doing it wrong.
I think so, too.
Okay.
Galanter said that Anderson is lying when she accuses the 2.5 Men star of trying to choke her in the couple's New York hotel room.
He sounds trustworthy.
Could you imagine having somebody try to strangle you, put their hands around your throat, in front of all these police officers.
By the way, I bet Joy Behar doesn't have to work very hard at all to imagine people wanting to strangle her. That was a thing that comes really naturally.
Could you imagine having somebody try to strangle you, put their hands around your throat, in front of all these police officers and security
personnel? Let me demonstrate, Joy.
And she doesn't say a word to anybody about it till after she lawyers up, till after a civil complaint's ready to be filed. What do you think's really going on here?
That guy's awesome.
Oh, that sells it.
What is his name?
Yale Galanter.
I'm putting him on retainer. I'm going to augment my team of lawyers with that guy. That guy is going to be added to my legal stable.
He says that Anderson is also lying when she accuses Sheen of using drugs on the night of their altercation in a New York hotel room. Because who would ever believe if Charlie Sheen would do drugs?
Now, is she a hooker?
She's a porn star. A porn actress.
Okay. I keep waiting for him just to end this like, and also, Joy, she's a whore. Who are we kidding?
He was searched. She was searched. The room was searched.
Why does Joy Behar keep coughing during this? And why did people leave her mic on?
He was searched. She was searched. The room was searched by the New York Police Department. It's a total fabrication. There were no cocaine. There was no white powder.
There were no cocaine in that room.
She never saw him doing anything illegal. Otherwise, when the police said to her, you know, Miss Capri, has Mr. Sheen done anything illegal, made you uncomfortable? She kept saying no, 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 no.
You know, Charlie Sheen is just sitting across the room licking a piece of broken glass and staring at her. God damn, what a weird world this is. Just one big zoo. You're listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm, brought to you by, among other folks, Castalia Language Center. Castalia Language Center can be found out more about... strange, sir. PortlandSpanish.com. That's where you go to find out more about them on the Intertron. That is PortlandSpanish.com. PortlandSpanish.com, all one word. Clara Greville, who is a native Spanish speaker from Argentina, now teaches Spanish language classes to adults. And I specify adults because when you're in high school, when you're in college, especially when you're young, when you're in high school, when you're in middle school, grade school, you learn it differently. And, you know, and also your kids are probably learning it in school, you know, right now, because it's a thing with every passing year. They teach more and more kids while they're still in second, third, fourth, fifth grade, sometimes right out of the gate in kindergarten, depending on what state you live in, to speak Spanish because it's a massively useful language. And, you know, it's going to be a thing that's going to be even more useful in the future. You know, if you learn a language now when you're an adult, you know, you're not going to learn it the same way you did when you were a kid, which is why it's good to be in a class with other adults and to be in a class where it's, you know, you're just not overrun with, you know, a bunch of people who are there because they got to get half a credit so they don't end up like, you know, working at an auto parts store for the rest of their life. So, you know, I'm just saying, this is the time when you can learn a language that maybe you tried when you were in high school and you just didn't feel like you were able to grasp it. You didn't feel like you retained a lot of it. Because Castalia Language Center is not just about memorizing stuff off a chart and then reciting it back and then forgetting about it later. You're going to learn to speak conversational Spanish by speaking Spanish conversationally. And they hold class sizes to know more than how many people, Don Taylor?
Ocho?
Yes, well done. To 8 people, which means you're going to get near individualized attention. So you can find out more about it by going to PortlandSpanish.com. Please tell me you heard about it here at Legion of News. That is Castalia Language Center at PortlandSpanish.com. Here is Don Taylor.
A man wearing a Bob Dylan backstage pass who ordered 178 pizzas from a Massachusetts pizza parlor has left the restaurant blowing in the wind.
What do you mean he was wearing a Bob Dylan...
He had a backstage pass, I guess, around his neck on a lanyard.
Oh, like he came, like, I'm here for the band?
Right. Okay. A man walked into Antonio's in the college town of Amherst, Massachusetts, early Saturday morning, shortly after Dylan had performed at the University of Massachusetts, and ordered $3,900 worth of pizza. He said he would return in several hours and deliver them to Dylan's crew. But he never returned, and the manager called the police. Restaurant employees stayed until 5:30 a.m. making the pizzas. Antonio's owner, Walter Pacheco, who apparently has never heard of getting a deposit when a large order comes in like that, told the Daily Hampshire Gazette that his workers had no reason to doubt the man worked with Dylan, but they got taken. Pacheco said he gave some of the pieces away, but had to throw away most of them.
If only there were a way to contact the people on Dylan's crew. If only there were some sort of magical device that would allow you to press a few buttons and then be instantly transported through, again, a series of tubes, verbally, to someone who could confirm or deny the request for
178 pizzas.
There you go.
If only someone who is in a business like making pizzas professionally knew that when someone places an extremely large order like that, you get at least half of the money up front.
Well, and I don't remember. I mean, like, every time I order anything, they say, hey, and what's your callback number, by the way? And, like, 9 times out of 10, they find a reason to call me back just to make sure that I'm not, like, winding up my high school biology teacher or something.
And you're just ordering a medium pepperoni.
Yeah. And I'm just some guy. So yeah. There you go. All right. With that, we draw to a close another exciting installment of Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget, we will be here live tomorrow. That is tomorrow, Thanksgiving. That is tomorrow, Thursday, the 25th of November. In the meantime, in between time, thank you for listening. Don't forget, you can get this program via iTunes later on the day or as a direct MP3 download here or legionofnews.com. At the news desk, it is Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show is next after a brief musical interlude and happens over at rickemerson.com for the low, low price of merely 32 cents a day. Thank you for listening. We will see you again tomorrow at noon. Have a satisfying and safe Wednesday, won't you please? This has been Legion of News.